Hey, you're listening to The Growth Signal. My name is Alyssa Nolte.
And I'm Jeff Moss.
And we're going to get right into it. Jeff, what is your hot take?
My hot take right now is something that's been happening for a while, which is that CS actually does own churn and solving churn, but maybe not the way that people think, because there's been a lot of chatter about, you know what, it's actually a product or it's actually everybody's responsibility. But I believe it is actually customer successes.
I am excited to talk about this because I have a wide range of people on this show. It's mostly like go-to-market focus, right? So I get sales in here who is blaming product, and I get customer success in here who is blaming sales, and product also likes to blame sales. Most people like to blame sales, and then sales just blames whoever they can blame in the moment, it feels like. So it sounds to me like you're saying it's time for customer success to own up to the fact and maybe take a little accountability, especially when it comes to churn. Is that fair?
100%. And where I'm splicing it is more so on, let's get really specific in our words, who owns the solving of it? It doesn't mean that there isn't other groups that that execute different pieces and have a role to play. But who's the department that's actually in pole position to be able to discern what's going on, what needs to be done throughout the go-to-market operations to actually be able to reduce churn and drive success with their customers?
So it's almost like you're saying churn may not be your fault, but it is your problem.
Yeah. Well, and you're actually more so, you're the only one in a position that could solve it. And I'll give you an example. So one of the things that happens that, to your point around sales and customer success tension that can occur is, you know, sales just keeps selling these bad third customers or these bad deals that, you know, don't even have enough. They didn't even solution enough product for the customer to even do the thing they're trying to accomplish. But how would sales know who the right customer is to go after that actually is going to retain and expand? How would sales know what a sufficient deal should look like? Now, from the outside in, you might think, well, it's obvious. If they're doing this, they'd have to buy all three products, not just the two. But do they know that? Have you, in customer success, studied who stays, who succeeds, and said, actually, if you're in this use case, you have to have these three products. And if these are your goals, if you're trying to double your leads or whatever the outcome is your product provides, you're going to have to do this much investment. You can't just do a POC and say good luck. And so that's just a small example of, you can blame sales because in the moment they've insufficiently solutioned the customer, but how could they have known? You're the one sitting in there with your finger on the pulse to be able to figure out what's actually going on to be able to communicate that to those other teams.
I wonder how many, what I'll call mature customer success organizations, have done really any type of analysis of what the retained customer has in common with each other, right? So if we have 15 accounts that are all staying, my guess is not very many organizations are looking at them. It's like, okay, well, they're not a problem. We're going to focus on the squeaky wheels, the ones that are we have to save. We're going to focus on our save motions instead of having the forethought to say, exactly to your point, the customers who stay have this in common. So let's make sure we get more customers who have that key characteristic. That means we're going to have more customers who are going to stay.
Yes. And that's where you shift to becoming, instead of the department of no, like, no, we can't sell them. Hey, stop doing those deals. Hey, don't do that. To the department of yes, actually, here's what you should be going after. But if you are going to sell somebody that's not the perfect fit, you at least need to commit them to this thing or confirm that this is the outcome they care about. You know, there's a company I work with that works in the medical space with different offices, and they have a bunch of different products that they offer that a typical doctor's office can take advantage of, but they also sell to pharmacies. No, pharmacies in their case are higher churn, but you can still sell to them if the pharmacy is committed to two or three of the outcomes that they can deliver on and is okay with not getting the other two outcomes that just don't work in a pharmacy versus a standard, you know, dental practice or something like that.
And I think too, what you're speaking to, because I sit on the sales side, right? I've mostly held front end pipeline type of roles, not necessarily that post sales, although I have a great deal of respect for people who do that. I'm sitting here thinking, if my product team, if my post sales team had come to me and said, hey, these customers need to buy these three things and they're going to be wildly successful and incredibly happy. As a salesperson, I'm really only looking for a few things. Smart things to say in sales calls that are likely to drive a deal close. So if I can walk in and say, hey, we've done an analysis of companies just like yours. the successful ones do these three things. The failures do those two things. So make sure you buy these three things because that's better for me anyway.
Yes, it's a win-win because you're going to get a better deal size in that example in terms of what you want on the closing. So you're incentivized to take what I have to offer you. And I get what I want, which is a customer that comes up with ready to go right on the kickoff call with a sufficient solution, a clear idea of what they're trying to accomplish, a couple of commitments that you talked about in terms of, hey, you're going to make sure you got to make sure you clean up your data, do this before you go in because we want to make sure that you can, you know, get success within the first 21 days. Those little things to communicate are where everybody wins. The customer wins, the sales rep wins, I win. And if it doesn't have to be us versus each other, it's all of us focused on the ultimate goal here, which is the customer getting the outcome they want and they keep paying us and we find more things to sell them to drive even more value.
Right. And the idea too that it doesn't have to be a you versus me as sales and you as customer success. We all want the same thing, which is for our company to make money so that we can get raises, so that we can all get bonuses, so we can keep our jobs. Right. And that's okay to say out loud. Like, you can want to do the right thing for your customer and make enough money to, you know, pay your wages on top of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that same thing could happen then. Let's flip it over to the product side a little bit too. I can sit here and say, oh, well, product doesn't have no idea what the customer is trying to accomplish. That new feature that came out was really dumb and it didn't even validate that it was useful. Again, customer success. Who is in the position best to be able to say, we've been studying our most successful customers. We've been studying where the gaps are. We've identified and prioritized. If we did this improvement or enhancement, we could get this much improvement in terms of ease of implementation or faster time to value or better results for the customer. So if you're frustrated that the most recent product release fell flat, don't blame them. It's your job to be able to communicate that to them. And then they can, you both win. Product's happy, they have a great release. You're happy because another problem was solved and another, you know, advantage for you to be able to.
So if you and I are kind of in wild agreement about this as a concept, right? That customer success is not necessarily just glorified onboarding and then, you know, high ticket customer support agents, but really customer advocates who are speaking up for the customer and speaking to the other entities and stakeholders inside of the organization. If we're in wild agreement on this, why is it not happening? What are people missing?
I would argue that in customer success, it's a very emotional discipline. I've said this before, because you're working with customers and customers get angry and there's any number of things that can go happen. And so the knee-jerk reaction is often, I get off a call, the customer's yelled at me, our product failed or the sales sold something. I instantly go, hey, sales, what the heck? Stop selling those dumb deals. Something's a product. Why haven't we got this resolved yet? And the issue there is that that's the temptation because I just came from an emotional situation. And so to me, the next reaction that would best solve it is an emotional reaction to somebody else. When in reality, what I think we struggle with as a discipline is being able to focus more on objectively what is actually happening, what is going to be the most effective way to actually solve that, not only here in the moment, but long term. And also, I will say there's another temptation in there, which is when you talked about at the beginning, as long as it's not solved, you can still blame everybody else. And so as long as I can still say sales does these crappy deals, even if most of my churn isn't because of those crappy deals, I can still go out and poke you in the eye when you have a meeting and say, well, our churn wouldn't be so bad if you didn't close those two deals that sucked last quarter. Well, yeah, but we lost 25 customers, not two. So yes, let's shore that up. Let's fix it. But let's also not use that as an emotional response to be able to, if we're truly trying to solve churn, we want to get that from 25 customers lost to six. And that's going to take fixing those two customer issues there with sales, fixing something in the product to get it to save another five customers. It's going to be things like that.
I think, unfortunately, you are very right. I've worked most of my career in small groups, small companies. So I like knew everybody very intimately. And then I did some consulting for a much larger organization, like enterprise level. And I found out real fast that everybody needs a scapegoat at all times. And as long as they have one, they're perfectly content to go do things. As long as there's not that fear of like, okay, if this goes wrong, then it's not my fault. I'm going to keep my job. I'll have someone else to point to. I unfortunately, I do think that is the reality of what we are seeing And a lot of our companies, big and small. You know, as you're thinking about how do we go down this path, right? So if someone is hearing this and they're in any role inside of the organization, whether that's sales, product, customer success, something else, and they're hearing this conversation and they're saying, okay, we are doing this. We are doing like a circle of finger pointing. Maybe I'm in sales and I want to form a better relationship with customer success so I can have those smart things to say to close a deal. How do I go down this path of figuring out how to build this communication flow or feedback loop, I guess you could call it, in a way that feels authentic?
Yeah, I would argue what you need is a common language, and that common language has to be steeped in objective truth. I'm a big fan of first principles and that way of thinking. And it all starts with, ding, 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 the customer. And we talked about a little earlier. If you want to step in this, I don't care where you are in the org, I want you to identify three to five successful customers. I don't care if there are, I know what I mean by successful is customers that are actually getting meaningful results from your product. I don't care if they're 5 years old or 2 months old with your company or whatever. They would say, and they might not even be happy, but they are getting results. And I want you to talk to them and ask them a few questions. What is success for you? How do you measure it? How are you showing that internally to your company? And then ask them about what they did to make this a success. Now, to the customer, it's going to seem like, duh. Yeah, so what we did is we had to clean our data first, because if you integrate first and then clean your data, it actually blows everything up. So first we cleaned our data, then we did this, then we had to adjust this. You guys don't have this feature, so we built an integration that did this, and boom, boom, boom. You're going to figure out what those outcomes that matter, because when you study those most successful customers, it's not going to be 35 different outcomes. It's going to be 3. It's going to be 4. They're all going to have the same things, because we're studying the successful ones, not all the ones that failed for trying to do some outcome that wasn't useful. And so I want to figure out what those are, and what are those common actions they took, things that they did to be able to achieve that. Once you have that objective truth, to your point around rather than having a scapegoat, now you have something that is more powerful than anything else in the company, which is if someone wants to push back on the things that you've just found, you have a great ace in the hole. I just talked to our top 5 customers, and this is what they said were the 3 outcomes that matter most to them. This is what they said was essential to their success. Now, we still have to have a lens and interpret those and figure out how we can mass do those actions and mass track those results and whatever it is. But I have the trump card, because it's not my opinion versus the sales leader's opinion or whatever, or wherever you're starting. It's this is what they said, and here's the recording, and here's what we understood that. And it's our responsibility now to operate to those things that we've been able to validate. And so that's another big thing when you're trying to bring all these people together, is you need an objective truth that's beyond my thing. If someone wants to disagree with Jeff Ma's opinion, that's fine. But you also have to face this other thing that's objective and tell me why you think it's not one of the 3 things those customers identified.
I think that there is, so much in what you just talked about that I think everybody needs to hear. So I'm going to come back and click on a couple of things that you said, because they bear repeating. One, I love that you specified, don't just talk to your happy customers, talk to your successful customers. Because I think a lot of people conflate happy and successful. I might like a workout program that I'm doing. If I am not getting stronger or losing weight, I'm not really successful, am I? I'm happy. Maybe I like it, but I'm not finding success, right? And I think it's so easy to go to the customers who are happy because it feels good. Let's be honest. It feels good to talk to people who like us and are happy. It does not feel good to talk to people who don't like us, even if they are successful, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's a really important thing, that people conflate happy with successful. But I also think we have to double click on this idea of not studying only our failures. I do think we should study some of the customers who churn and understand what is the reason that they left, but not dwell on them as the only thing that's going to be our North Star for how we retain future customers, and double click on focusing on how do we study the customers who are here to stay and what do they have in common. And then the third thing that you said that I think everybody needs to really, really think about is stop coming to meetings with your instinct or your intuition or something you saw on TikTok or something a competitor is doing or something that came across your LinkedIn feed, and come with real, hard, unarguable results. Your voice of customer, what are they saying to you and how do you back it up? I think that those are things a lot of people skip because it's easier to do a gut feel conversation, and it doesn't take the amount of effort. Because what if you go talk to those customers and they're not happy? And all of a sudden you just like opened a wound and made them aware that they weren't happy, right? So there is risk in it. But I think if you do it with the right intention and the right level of expertise, you're going to find so much more to drive you forward than to pull you back.
Well, to your point, there is that fear you talk about. Like, it's a fear of, you know, what if we figure these things out or we uncover something that's worse than we thought or whatever. That was true before you realized it. They weren't getting, you just are aware of it. And I think once you can remove all of that, because again, what we're talking about here now in a separate issue, which is just you're focusing on objective truth. So it's bigger than me. You're focusing and not on getting the credit. It's bigger than me. And then you're also figuring out or focusing on actually figuring out the answer. And guess what? That way, if stuff blows up in my face or I figure out this customer is a 9/11 fire, I don't freak out, because that's actually what I'm trying to solve for. It's actually what I'm trying to get to the bottom of. And I think it's those things, those fears that keep people from stepping into it, because the common thing in customer success is like, well, some of these people, we talk to them, they're going to realize they're paying us and they'll churn. That's dead revenue. So I am going to talk to them, because I actually most interested in driving value and having my customers retain for the right reasons. And so whether you pray that they don't notice is a waste of time if you're in pursuit of actually being successful, actually having durable growth.
It takes me back to, you know, my example of, you know, if I was doing a workout program and I was happy but unsuccessful, it's kind of the same thing as individuals, right? Like, if you are sick and you don't know it, that doesn't mean the sickness isn't there. Right. And just because you don't know doesn't mean the issue doesn't exist. And wouldn't you rather know that something was wrong so you could do an early intervention or do something about it, or at least know? So when you feel that weird feeling in your stomach, it's indigestion versus like cancer, right? You need to know things so that you can make an active decision, and choosing not to know is still choosing.
Yes. And again, I think that temptation is still in there, because if we don't know, then we don't have to do all the work, and we can still blame so-and-so in sales because we think that's really where the problem is. That's my opinion. And so there are a lot of perverse incentives to not solve this and not look under the rock or under the bed and see all the monsters on there or whatever. I'm not denying that. My thing is just, I can't live in the alternate reality where stuff keeps blowing up in my face and I choose to just blame somebody else and ignore the root cause. I can't live that way. I have to get to the bottom of it. I have to figure out what's going on, because at least in the pursuit of solving it, I'm going to have a heck of a lot of fun, and I'm going to be able to have a lot of joy in getting a step closer. It's probably an endless pursuit in every company that we talk about, but there's a difference between being at the very beginning of that and being in the, you know, ironing out the edges when you're, you know, get above water.
So one of the things I do want to ask you about is, how can we make sure that customer success gets the credit for when this gets solved, right? So in sales, I am very clear if I did well or I did poorly, right? The customer closes a deal, I hit my quota, you know, I close X number of deals, therefore I get the credit for the revenue. Now on the flip side, let's say someone goes on this journey and they are really solving churn. They are owning that number. And it's going down, it's going in the right direction. How do we make sure that customer success has the common language to stand up and say, hey, I did a good job here and I'm looking forward to the recognition for it?
Yeah. So one of the mistakes that people make is that because we measure retention and also expansion and other things, and break down retention into, you know, gross versus net, that's delayed. It's a delayed tracker. Even if I did a bunch of improvements, I got to wait some time for that to be able to show up in the numbers. And that's another reason why people don't do this or fail to do it, because you make a change and then you don't actually, if you're just doing those high level metrics, you're not going to know whether it's working or not. And so what you have to do is break down that into that ultimate metric into sub metrics that can be alerted even faster. So as an example, let's say we pinpointed that we're selling some misaligned deals. And also the onboarding is hurting because of that. Because we've been misaligned deals, we are also taking longer to onboard. We're not getting people the value. So what would I do? Now, the customers, let's say we have 12-month contracts. So even if I do better onboarding, you got to wait 12 months, really? No. One, we also always have leakage or customers that dead on arrival or canceled, especially if you have, you know, opt-out periods or things like that. So that's already some early signals. But what would I do? I would institute the change in sales. Hey, I need you to focus on this messaging. I need you to sell these kinds of packages. And in onboarding, we're going to make these changes. And then I would timestamp that. Okay, we launched the sales changes on, you know, November 1st, and we launched the new onboarding on November 15th. And then what I do is I flag every customer that came in after that point. And if my onboarding is 21 days or if it's 90 days, I don't care. Then that's when I start tracking what's going on here. So I could already start to see we made a change in the sale on the 1st. We made a change on the 15th. And then by the time we get to February 1st, I can start to look at those customers. Did I have any early churns? No. Out of the 15 customers that bought in November, zero churns. Out of those 15 customers, how many of them got results in the first 90 days? All 15 got measurable results in all three categories. So I can start to get those early indicators of success just in that one instance to be able to get credit for we're making this change and we're calling our shot. And then when you get to that 12-month mark, I can then say this new cohort as of November 2025, how do they do in 2026? Guess what? All 15 retained.
That's so practical. And I think it's really important because I think if you don't do it systematically and practically, then it's, you know, the old superstitions of, well, the moon was full, so we retained these customers, right? But by doing it in a way that's specific and practical and measurable, you get the credit and you showcase, you know, sales as well. Like, oh, sales did a great job implementing this message. And so therefore we got this onboarding. And all of a sudden you're all in the same boat rather than having a bunch of people who are out for themselves.
Exactly. Yeah. Spread the wealth. And you can even say, hey, just so you know, early improvement. Because sales, you made this change, just so you know, we were 15 for 15 with scheduled onboarding calls, and there was no, I know sales, you hate when we have to bring you back in to talk through the solution or whatever, if there's misunderstanding. Guess what? 15 out of 15, no issues. That's something to proactively push out there because sales wants to hear that. They want to know it.
Yeah, we're simple creatures. We have certain things that we want to do and certain things we don't want to do. I don't want to come back in after I've already closed and I want the deal to close and close again. So we're pretty easy to work with if you know how to play the game with us. You know, considering all the people that you know or aspire to know, who else is out there? Who else should we be listening to?
Yeah, I have a good friend, Matt Evans. He's a COO at Corebridge and he does a lot of things on leadership as well. And he's one that he's got some things that he teaches in terms of I'm very focused on the playbooks and some of the outcome things, but he does a great job in terms of as you've made some of those changes or as you identify those changes, how do you systematically put it into your what the director of VP focuses on, what is the manager focus on, what is the rep focus on, and how do we actually be able to track our performance? Because as we kind of wrapped up here, it's so important to not only call your shot and figure out what we're going to do about it, but then to actually track and measure that performance and prove that we're making progress against it. And so he's someone that I would recommend giving a follow for because he's a great thought leader in that space.
You know, speaking of the idea of the playbooks and everything that you've got going on, if someone is hearing this and they need a little bit of help, they want a little bit of coaching or kind of a masterclass, if you will, and trying to figure out how to do this the right way, do you have anything that you'd recommend, anything that they could take advantage of?
Yeah, a couple of different levels. So one is I always recommend the book, The Challenger Sale. If you haven't read it from a customer success perspective, now you're probably familiar on the sales side, but if you read it with a customer success mind, I'm telling you, there's so many insights. I actually think it's a better book for customer success than even sales. And I'll fight somebody about that, I guess. But on the other side, what I also offer as well is I'm constantly trying to put things into templates. I have some things coming out in January and in 2026 that are all focused on ready-made templates that can just help you get in going. I have a course that helps you identify those outcomes, how to talk to your successful customers and get some of those things going there. But then also templates that help you to both implement these things and work with those other teams and give those goodies to the sales team or to these product teams so that they're more likely to execute those changes that you've identified.
And if someone is really connecting with you, they want to learn more, they want to check out these courses or some of your templates, where can they find you online?
Yeah, so if you go to expansionplaybooks.com. That's where you can find a lot of my content. I have a newsletter on there. And then also, if you find me on LinkedIn, Jeff Moss, founder of Expansion Playbooks, I'm always posting. I'm always doing hot takes. And so feel free to engage me on there as well. I'm always living in the comments. So
I can attest, I am connected with Jeff on LinkedIn, and I can give a double thumbs up for following him. He always has really insightful commentary and posts that make me sit up and say, okay, I haven't really thought about it that way, but I'm excited to learn more. So Jeff, thank you so much for coming on the Growth Signals. Thank you for joining us for this conversation. Thank you for being so specific and practical about things that we can really do to affect change.